I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know. What do the crew team at USC, a former women's soccer coach at Yale, and an Emmy-winning actress from Desperate Housewives all have in common? They're all involved in a nationwide college admissions scandal, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by The Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay and by sports writer Shireen Ahmed. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Jason.
Jason, what's going on?
Well, when word broke this week of the arrests in the Great American Super Rich Parents College Admissions Scam, we knew it was only a matter of time before the lens turned to that reliable citadel of integrity we like to call college sports. This time, the sports at the center were rarefied, amateur ones, comparatively genteel, low-profit pastimes like crew, tennis, water polo, soccer, and sailing. Sailing! I didn't even know that was a college sport. I'm really going to hear it from the college sailors, aren't I?
You are.
Here's how the scam worked. For a whole pile of money, a coach on the inside would set aside a recruiting slot for a full-paying student who would be fast-tracked for admission. The student didn't need to play the sport. Even better, some parents went so far as to Photoshop their children's faces atop the bodies of unsuspecting water polo players. I do not know whether this story makes me laugh or cry. For now, I prefer just to laugh. But what I love about it is how this is a perfect snapshot of the American privilege economy, right? Where money buys almost anything and it's okay to lie and cheat if the end justifies the means.
First of all, I'm particularly baffled by the former Yale soccer coach who took a $400,000 bribe to recruit someone who doesn't even play soccer. Now, I'm wondering how that works. Like, when you get on the pitch and you just stand there lost, like, doesn't anyone notice at practice when you know can't dribble a ball? But secondly, it's something in the cartel of college sports that we can't specifically blame on the organization of the NCAA. So I'm going to be positive about this and just chalk it up to shady, shady parents with privilege.
My first reaction to this story was to go back to that sort of college athlete stereotype. And often I think we think of college athletes as having come from maybe disadvantaged neighborhoods. We think of college sports as a way to get ahead. And I had this immediate reaction that that system was being used to benefit kids whose parents photoshopped their faces onto other kids. But of course, that's not actually how this system works. For every kid who has to ride the city bus to practice, there's three more whose parents have paid to send them to the best camps, hire the best private coaches. Often those parents spend more money on all of those things than a college scholarship is worth.
And look at the way that the students in this particular scam have been portrayed as kind of innocent pawns in the middle of a multi-million dollar fraud. Look at that and compare that to the way that the NCAA, and I'll bring the NCAA into this, aggressively patrols eligibility for athletes who dare to make a dollar on their own name or image or get a second job in addition to playing a sport 45 hours a week. So there is multitudinous elements of hypocrisy here.
Shireen, you're up.
I hope everyone had a wonderful, happy International Women's Day last Friday, to which the U.S. national women's team certainly did. They put forth a suit against the United States Soccer Federation, that are their employers, about equal pay. The most watched game in the history of the United States was the U.S. women's national team playing Japan in the 2015 World Cup final, with over 23 million people watching. So this is really important because, you know, all the arguments of they don't make enough money, there's not enough merchandise, that's not true at all. They have been supported by the ranks of Billie Jean King and Serena Williams very publicly. And I think that's very relevant and important considering we are 3 months away from the Women's World Cup to be held in France.
I think you're 100% right. And I also feel like this is the right time to do this. They have tremendous leverage going into the World Cup. They are the defending champs. They are the straw that stirs the drink financially for the sport worldwide. And in addition to what you're just saying about performance, they're famous. If the U.S. women's national soccer team was to walk down the street, people would be jumping out of their cars to slap them high fives. all the sort of, you know, standard tropes about, oh, well, you know, the men's game is just so much more lucrative, don't apply to the United States women's soccer team. And I applaud them for doing it at a moment when, you know, traditionally we'd say, look, you don't want any sort of distractions going into, you know, something as major as a World Cup.
And this is something that's been in the works, and props to the women on that team. They're using time and momentum in their favor because it's crunch time now, and the United States doesn't want to be embarrassed. As Jason said, they're reigning champs.
And I think it's important for us to think about also that this doesn't just have implications for the United States or for women in the United States, because while the U.S. women's team is at the top in the U.S., internationally, it wasn't that long ago that the Italian women's national team was wearing hand-me-downs from the men, right?
That's right.
Like, that's where that stands. And that's, I think, why it's so important for the U.S. women to make this stand, because they're not just making it for themselves, they're making it for their entire sport. FIFA did double the prize pool for the upcoming Women's World Cup because the U.S. women brought attention to the fact that it was so out of whack. Now, it's still ridiculously out of whack.
Yeah. They doubled it, but it's still less than that of the men. And the thing is that globally, as someone who studied this and studies inequalities in soccer around the world, inequity in pay is a global issue. And the U.S. women's team is actually helping female footballers across the world with this. And I really hope it pans out. And that's why they have the support they do.
Great. Well, this week I learned that a statistic I have often quoted, that an American male between the ages of 20 and 40 who stands at least 7 feet tall has a 17% chance of being in the NBA right now. That statistic was quite probably never true, but it is definitely not true anymore. According to a piece in Bleacher Report, while teams used to look for two or three centers over 7 feet, now they only want one. And that guy, get this, that guy is actually expected to have skills beyond standing underneath the basket and grabbing rebounds. There's nothing new about any of this, of course. But that Bleacher Report piece reminded me that life is actually not very easy for a 7-footer. You can't fit in airline seats. You can't buy clothes off the rack. Shoe choice is most definitely limited. So the change away from all these big guys is definitely good for basketball. It's made the sport more fun to watch. But what will become of the 7-footers?
Well, I'm fearful that they'll enter the media workforce and soon a 7-footer will take my job.
Oh, no.
I can't help but think a little selfishly here. It is a changed game. There's no question about it. I've had the privilege of meeting and interviewing Steph Curry, and if you looked at him, you wouldn't say immediately, greatest basketball player in the universe, greatest shooter of all time. You'd say, that guy is Steph Curry. He could work with me at the Journal covering real estate.
Shireen, do you feel bad for the big man?
I remember Spud Webb.
Mm. So, yes.
He was an anomaly. He was, he's only 5'7". I'm 5'6", okay? And I've got children that have been alive for 5 minutes that are over 6'3 and 6'5". So, like, but I also am from the understanding and love of Tim Duncan, who was a big guy. And in my opinion, one of the best ballers out there. He had skill. He could move. Timmy was phenomenal. He set up passing. Like, it's not good enough to just be tall anymore. You got to be tall and amazing.
Listen, I can tell you where this all goes.
Yeah.
We're all getting replaced by robots. You know, it can happen as early as next week, okay?
As long as they're not overly tall robots, I'll be okay. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been sports writer Shireen Ahmed and The Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.